Hello, everyone, and welcome to another very special episode of the 1973 podcast. We're here, gracious, thankful, with former NHL alumni, Dave Jensen. Dave, thank you so much for joining us on this Friday night. And we were chirping before we even got on, giving Ed a hard time for being late to the party, talking about stuff we got going on and what we're gonna
Big
do
fine,
tonight.
big
So
fine. I hope Ed brought his wallet.
Yeah,
Well, the funny thing about it is being the operations officer, I can make magic happen. You know what I mean? Money comes, money goes. You know, beautiful job. You know, that's why you can be late, Ed.
that's right.
Right? Yeah, but you're not late. We're supposed to start at 8, right? We
Yeah,
were early. Yeah.
yeah. Easily replaced, sir. Easily replaced.
Love the banter amongst friends, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Lifetime friends. We're going to have some fun. We've had fun with everybody that we've had on. And at the end of the show, I always say officially friend of the show. So, Dave, get ready because we love to tell stories, but it's Yeah.
your floor. And we always start with take us back to how the whole hockey journey started as a kid. Were you a fan of a certain team growing up, certain player?
Yeah, so I right, because you start sports earlier, you got a whole neighborhood of guys you can play whatever sport it is with, and whether it's the family or not. So I had a pond right by my house. I grew up on a pond, over a pond called Trout Pond, and it was nicknamed Max Pond in Needham. And you could actually, it was down a hill. I remember when I was a kid, I'd put my skates on in the living room, and you could just actually like freaking almost ski down the hill, to the nice pond. So started skating 4 years old there. And back in our day, now kids are playing organized hockey at like, I don't know, 5 or 6, like these Mike programs and stuff. You couldn't legally play in a youth program. And there were no select teams back then, right? 1972, whatever it was, right? So Squirts was the first program. And I think it was, you had to be 9 and 10 to play Squirts, 11, 12, Pee Wee. And somehow I was a pretty good little player, right? So I was able to sneak on at 7 on the Squirt team, and play for Needham. And Needham, if you know anything about Needham, like that's Robbie Fatorikland. And he's a legend there. And a little bit older than me, graduated 1970 from Needham High School. But I still remember, being 4 or 5 years old and going up to high school games and watching him play. And he was just something else. He was a magician out there. And as much as I love Robbie, Bobby O was like, he was just, I don't know how old you guys are, but like he was poetry in motion. He was like, next to God, the greatest thing to me, right? Growing up. And my dad used to let me stay up, a little later to watch the games. I think they started at 7 then, so I could stay up and watch at least a period or two until I got a little older. But that, I think, really changed. And I was young, but I hear this from the older people or the older guys. Bobby Orr revolutionized the game, but he also changed it in Boston. You saw these rinks popping up. Now, again, I was young, and I just remember having a nice time being driven to the rinks. But if you hear the stories like that, that just galvanized New England, right? Bobby Orr. And to me, he was, like I said, he was just the ultimate idol to watch play. So I wanted to be a hockey player. I played all sports. I think most kids did and loved all sports, but hockey, there was a great love, and it was the most passionate thing I had in my life. Driveway, basement, practicing street hockey. I just freaking loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. In fact, a little funny story is, my uncles, I think when I was 4 years old, they bought me these expensive Tonka trucks, and we had an unfinished basement that we used as a shooting range, downstairs, my brother and I and the neighborhood kids, and used to roll the truck back with my kids and use it for target practice. And my mom comes down and like, the trucks are shattered, right? With hockey pucks and stuff. And, I'd come home from school in kindergarten, and, I was out in the garage with cones, weaving them, or, she'd watch me down the pond skating by myself for hours. And she used to think like, wow, this kid, what is wrong with this kid? You know what I mean? That's all he thinks about, so to speak. But I'm sure my dad got it right, and the guys. But yeah, so that's how my career started. And I'll tell you this too, I think with any sport and any youth program, when you see kids in high school or go beyond, it all starts with youth coaching and the development, the fundamentals. And I was very fortunate. I say this all the time. I was very fortunate. We had tremendous coaches. This gentleman named Harry Duvall was legendary, and I had him for 5 years. His son was my line mate, left winger for all my youth hockey and through Belmont Hill, actually, when we started before I transferred to Lawrence Academy. And he was just a tremendous coach. He actually coached Fedoruk, years before me. But I mean, that having that advantage, I don't think any kid who's ever made it to the highest levels would ever be there without great youth coaching and development for fundamentals and skills. And I was, we all benefited from that in Needham Mass, great youth program.
So, Dave, at what point did you realize growing up that it could blossom into something bigger than just, getting a regular 9 to 5 after you graduated?
Yeah, so I mean, it was truthfully, it was late. I always dreamed about playing for the Bruins or playing, college hockey, whatever it might have been, right? But the reality of it was, when I was a squirt, I wanted to be a peewee. You know what I mean? And I did my best to get to that level. When I was a peewee, I wanted to get to Bantam A, make that team. Then it was the freshman team at Belmont Hill in the 8th grade, and then the Savard. And I say this to parents when we talked about the skill center and the camps that Feather and I used to do. So talking to parents, like, keep them present, keep them practicing and reaching their abilities where they are now and shooting for the next level. I've never seen a kid go from 12 years old to the NHL in my life, and you never will, right? Don't put that kind of pressure on them. Let them enjoy it. You know what I mean? If it's not his passion, they'll find his passion, right? In hockey, the two things that you can control, and this is what my father demanded of me, and I demand of my own kids, and I demand of kids I coached, is effort and attitude. 100% effort all the time, or we got a problem, and a great team attitude. And that went to, like, my daddy taught me at a young age. That's like so unselfish team great attitude, like where you're not having a good game, I don't want to see bad body language out there and selfishness, right? Like, your teammate scores a goal, you legitimately be happy for them, and they're having a great game. Like, and that was really drilled into me to the point where I don't know. Like, I believed it and I lived my life like that, And you see, that's not the case in a lot of situations, right? So I think that's very important. And it's the only two things a kid can control, and you can really, like that I would come down on a kid, meaning like that's not good enough, When I say come down, I'm not physical, you know what I mean? Back in our days, the coach used to kick over the trash bin, and hit us with the stick in the rear. Not I never did that, but
Allegedly.
yeah. You know what I'm saying though. But yeah, so I'll tell you this. So I get to Belmont Hill, and I played in the freshman team. I played varsity when I was a freshman in high school, and it's great hockey. I think we probably, if we didn't have the best high school hockey team in the country, I don't, we were right there. We had, four women. We had the Fuskos, we had Ruutu, Christian Ruutu from Finland. And I played in line with Scotty Fusco. He was a senior, which really helped my development, because I didn't start out the first, I don't know, like 3, 4 weeks of the season. I think I was playing in the third line. And Kenny Martin was a hell of a coach, phenomenal. Again, another coach that you don't get there without, on it and having him for a few years. But at one point, he moved me up to Fusco's line, and like it really helped me take off. And I think I ended up, but actually, was like one of the top three scorers in the league. He was first because of him, you know what I mean? And the fact that I was a pretty good player who could get him the puck and stuff like that, So when I get now, I'll fast forward to sophomore year, Scotty's gone. I really took control of it. I think I was, I know I was the leading scorer, and I was like the only all New England kid in that ISL, which is pretty good for a sophomore back then, right? So, at towards the end of after 3 years at Belmont Hill, to be quite honest with you, like, I started getting the itch to go somewhere else. It was a great academic school, but it was an all boys school, suit, coat, and tie every day, commute from Needham, leave at 6, come home at 8. And I'm like, listen, I just talked to my parents about, well, And I said, "Well, you're not going to Needham High School, you know." But I said, "Well, all right." So Nobles was down the street; that was an option. But I really, when I was playing that, I saw I really loved Lawrence Academy when we played there for the student body. Like the place was always jammed. I liked the fact that it seemed like the kids were really good kids, and as a 16-year-old too, there were girls. You know what I mean? Which is doesn't hurt, right? You know, when you're in high school. And you know, I knew the coach, and I knew a couple of players that I was in a bantam camp out in Colorado, like a national camp. We're pretty good that we're going there. So like, I negotiated my parents, and I transferred there my junior year. So my junior year really lit it up in the ISL, and then there was the first Mass Minnesota Hockey Series back. I don't know if you guys remember this stuff, like Mass Minnesota. It was a big deal. The first one was in 1983. You should see the roster we had on that team, right? You know, with Kevin Stevens and Barrasso and Bourbeau, and we had a Stevie Leach, and we'll go on and on, right? Some Mike Golden was another second round pick. But I had a really good series there. I think it was the MVP of that. And the Olympic Committee was there in the stands. And I did play in these national camps for Lou Vero, the coach, so he knew who I was. And I did pretty well in those camps in Colorado in the summer. In fact, it was guys like Clark Donatelli and Brian Lawton and Phil House, you know, like they really did a good job of like figuring out the best guys. They knew from different regions, right? There were unbelievable camps, and there were scouts up there as well. But at that point in time, I was still a junior. I was 17 years old, and I ended up that June, that was in the spring, I ended up being selected in the first round by the Hartford Whalers, which was pretty unique because I was a junior. You know, a lot of times, you know, back then, first rounders were expected to, you know, sort of get a shot that next year. And I certainly, they knew they were going to have to wait a year. You know what I mean? On that. So it might have dropped me back a few slots, but I got drafted. I mean, at that point in time, to answer your question, like that's when I really started thinking that junior year, like I might have a shot at this. You know what I mean? Like pro hockey. But not until then. You know what I mean? And that's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry for that.
No.
But you just go through the whole thing, and that's that junior year, like the way things developed for me, like that's when I really started thinking I might have it. But my parents always kept me grounded in educational, like college scholarship, college scholarship. And then after that draft, and I still remember the date. It was June 8th of 1983, because I was taking a final exam at Lawrence Academy. It was the last one. I was walking back to my dorm, and then there's two levels. There's a couple different entrances. For whatever reason, it's the weirdest thing. I walked in like the door I never walk in, where the payphone is, that usually the younger classmen, the first floor, come up and get, you know, juniors and seniors upstairs. "Hey, your mom's on the phone," or whatever, payphone calling. And the phone was ringing. I'm walking by and I just answer it. And someone says, is David Jensen there?" An older gentleman. I'm like, "This is him." And he goes, "Hey, David, this is Emil Francis from the Hartford Whalers. I just want to tell you, we're proud that we selected you in the Flames of Montreal, right? The draft." And my father and brother went up there just to see what it was like, but I couldn't because I was still in high school. So I was like, "Wow." I said, that's great. But I was shocked, you know, just the weirdest thing. Never answered that phone all year, right? That whole year I was there. The one time walking by, I answer the phone, and it's a male, right? Francis, the cat. So it was quite a day too. You know, it was really a thrilling day. And then a few weeks later, they had what was called the National Sports Festival out in Colorado, where they took the top 80, what they consider to be the top 80 amateur players, and they put them on four teams for 2 weeks. You had skills and practice for a week, then a round robin tournament, and that was to select the Olympic team. And I was fortunate; I put in a pretty good line and had a really good, you know, tournament where I actually led that in scoring, you know, that National Sports Festival. And then I was selected. Like Louis Vero had come up to me, you know, and said, "You know, we're going to take you and all that stuff." And I was only still 17 years old, right? So I was thrilled by that. So that all came together where I'm like, again, like I think first round pick, I might have a shot to actually, you know, play in the NHL someday. Pretty good. That was a pretty quick answer, huh?
No, that's what we like. I mean, there's so many people that watch it for the stories or stuff that never gets talked about, or just those deep dives into answers. That's great.
And I never go, when I talk to like NHL players, usually we're well above what we just talked about. We're talking about stories and fun times we had, right? Whether it was on the road, practice, whatever it might have been, right? So I had to really think about, that whole comfort or whatever, right? On it.
Well, you can ask Andre. We according to him, we ask great questions. So
Yeah, you do. You do. You do.
see, confirmed.
Hopefully, I'll keep him shorter next time,
No,
right?
that's
No,
fine.
please
No,
don't.
we're here all night. We're here for you, Dave. So
Thanks.
before we get into the Olympics, I want to have Ed and Tom ask questions so we can stay in the
Yeah,
timeline. Tom, what do you
sure.
got?
Sure. Now you got drafted by Hartford. Did they contact you beforehand to let you know that they were interested, or was there another team that you had talked to?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, there were every at my high school games, there were scouts at pretty much every game, right? So I had a pretty good idea I was going that first to second round range. Like I said, because I was a junior and I made the draft by less than a few weeks, the cutoff date, and that's why, or I would have been in the next year's draft, right? On it. So I think being a junior, it may have like pushed me back a little bit, so I knew it could be second round because of that, but Dave McNabb, Peter's brother, he was one of the chief scout. Bobby Crocker was the chief scout with the Whalers. They were at all my games, and McNabb used to go like hockey night in Boston that previous summer. I was the leading scorer and MVP of that, and so he used to come to every game. He used to tell me, "You're going to be a first rounder, like Hartford's going to take you," because Hartford had two picks that year, two first rounders. They had the number two, where they took Sylvain Turgeon. Then they had 20 because they traded Mark Howe to Philly. And I think Lidsman was part of that deal, but they ended up getting Philly's first round pick, and only 21 teams. So it was Philly and then Boston, number 21. Nevin Marquardt went behind me at number 21 back then. It was a great draft. I mean, it went Lawton, Sylvain Turgeon, LaFontaine, Yzerman, number four. Barrasso, I think Neely was, I could be wrong, but I think he was somewhere eight or maybe even before that. But there was a lot of, it was one of the deeper drafts, that you'll find in history. There was some great players, taking that. I'm not one of them, but there were some great players, you know what I mean, in that 83 draft.
Disagree.
Top 10.
Disagree. For the fans at home, disagree. Well, not just because you did the show, but disagree. Ed, question for Dave.
Sure. Hey, Dave, what was the speed difference going from Lawrence Academy out to those camps in Colorado? Did you feel like at first, did it feel like it was, did you feel kind of like, wow, this is much faster than what I'm used to? Or did you feel
Yeah.
like you just kind of sat right in?
Good question, Ed. And I'll be honest, I don't want to sound like conceited, but speed was my game,
Right.
right? One of them. I was a pretty good skill player too. But even coming to high school, like during the summer before that National Sports Fest, I was skating in Providence, Lou Lamoriello, and a bunch of the guys down there from Providence College. And I was doing just fine with the speed. So, and then at that Sports Festival, they also did testing, right? Like skating and all that. And they had like all the things. Jack Blatherwack, they used to call him Cardiac Jack. So they did testing of speed from different, like your acceleration to between the blue lines. And I placed first at all those, you know what I mean? In fact, I was the second fastest ever timed that he ever timed there, right behind Neil Broughton. And Jack is like, wow, this is freaking amazing, for a 17-year-old, because Neil was a little older and all that stuff, and Neil could fly, Broughton. And I played in the 84 Canada Cup too, right? After the Olympics, before going to Hartford, and I played in a line with him and Davey Christian. Neil Broughton, what a great guy, and what a phenomenal player too. Like Neil Broughton, I got to tell you, that was a thrill to play in the Canada Cup, against like Gretzky. And not to take it another level, but look at Canada's roster that year. They cut Denny Savard, you know what I mean? In his prime in 84, that's how freaking deep they were, you know what I mean? At center, like
Yep.
Denny Savard and, cutting Hall of Famers, like Scottie Stevens and other guys too, on it. They were deep. But we had, Trottier played that year for us, Brian Trottier, another just tremendous guy. And he had dual citizenship. And for some reason, he chose to play for the American team. And he was like, they just wrote him up in Canada because we played six exhibition games up there. But what a guy, what a player, Brian Trottier. We had like I think at least 10 Hall of Famers on our team too in 84, you know. I'll tell you our defense. I think I can still remember it. So we had Chelios, Housley, Langway, Mike Ramsey. I'm forgetting someone else too, who I think is in the hall. But we had a freaking we had a wagon, you know, on. And then we had, you know, like Trottier, Joey Mullen, like a lot of unbelievable hockey players, right? It was just a great experience for. And I was 18 then, 18 years old. I'm trying to remember I just turned 18, you know, in August. Well, actually, it was during the Canada Cup, because I can remember it's the first time. And I won't mention who. We were out in Minnesota. We played a game, and so they made me take shots of tequila. And I've never been sicker in my freaking life. You know what I mean? On August 19th of 1984. I wasn't used to that stuff. You know what I mean?
Is it one of the
another
people
one,
that
young
you...
blood. Another one, young blood.
Dave, was it one of the guys you said, he's a great guy?
Yeah, because they all were. You know what I mean? And like, I would have done this. It was all in good fun, right?
Yeah.
A couple of shots of it. I just never drank hard stuff in my life, you know? Maybe a few beers. We won't tell anybody. I think
no, allegedly, little, Dave.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Yeah.
Parking lot beers, maybe.
Yeah, a few of those, right?
It's got statute of limitations.
Woods,
you've already exceeded
school.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Wherever you can hide it.
So let's talk about that 84 Olympic team.
Yeah.
There's a couple of notable names on there, more than a couple.
Oh yeah,
and the one that sticks out to me is Pat LaFontaine.
One of my greatest friend, one of the greatest friends I've ever had. We were so Patty and I were roommates that whole year, and we were line mates on that diaper line, right? And still to this day, we're as close as can be because it's quite a bond, you know. There's nothing like it. Pro hockey doesn't compare because, you know, we spent, it was a 6 month road trip. You know what I mean? Going here, there, and everywhere. And we played 67 games. And following the 80 team, you know, everyone treated us like we were the gold medal team. Every place was filled out, the receptions after every game, which could be tiresome at times. But there's a special bond there with Patty and I because we were so young. You know, he's, I don't know, probably like 6 months older than me. I think he was born in February, you know, of 84. In fact, I know he was. He was born the same date as the gold medal was won, February 22nd. That's easy to remember. And my wife was born the 23rd, February. So that's another way it's easy to remember. But Patty's just like, what a and you, sometimes you say this about players and you wonder if it's true. I think he was the best American ever, right? And I'm biased as hell, right? Because I love the kid dearly. But as great a hockey player as he was, he's a better guy. And like legitimately so, as far as like just ethics, morals, the way he treats people. He's like Bobby Orr, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing. And I just can't say enough great things about him and having that experience. And we talk about it all the time, like, I can't believe it was 41 years ago, whatever, even more. The clock keeps ticking, right? Where we were just kids and, you know, I call him Frenchie and he called me Wiley. So my nickname was originally the Roadrunner, right? Because of my speed. And then Chelios, Chris Chelly, who's great, love Chelly, right? So he changed it up to, I was a little bit reckless. I'd run through everything, you know, hence all the freaking reconstructed knee and shoulders. But Chelly changed it to Wiley Coyote because I was freaking, you know, I'd smash into boards through goalposts, start all sorts of brawls by just being freaking reckless out there, you know? So it changed from Roadrunner to Wiley, right? And until this day, he calls me Wiley, and we call him, you know, we used to call him, I didn't call him this because he didn't like it. Chell used to call him Franny for franchise, right? And then I call him Frenchie, which he liked, you know what I mean? He's French and stuff, so I still call him Frenchie and Wiley, and just one of the best human beings you'll ever meet in your life. But what a player, man. I'm telling you. Like, to play with him, you know, and I wish to God either Hartford took him or I was with the Islanders, you know what I mean, at some point in time early in our careers, because we had a really, like, you know, when you just gel, you know what I mean? Like, we had on the ice, we knew where each other were. I think if you go back and look at the stats, I don't know if they keep them, but I know this to be like Pat had somewhere around 100 points. I had something like 87, and the next closest was Eddie with like 40 something. You know what I mean? Points. So there was a lot of drop off from, you know, what we did because we could both fly. Eddie was a phenomenal player, and Eddie was even younger. believe it or not, right? But Eddie was so smart and strong, but he'd always be the third man coming late because he, you know, he'd be the first to say this because he couldn't keep up with us, you know? But anytime that puck came back, Eddie was freaking lights out, you know, just smart and just a bull, right? Strong, everything, perfect complement with that line, that type of line. And Pat used to say this too, like he feels like it's one, he still says this to his dad. He thinks it's USA's signature line, like they never had a signature line, like the diaper line. And Pat always says that to me, right? I'm like, yeah, all right, you know what I mean? I'll buy it.
Olchek, he's had a lot of the younger fans will only know Eddie Olchek from
broadcasting,
you know, broadcasting, yeah. But yeah. You can kind of reinforce what a decent player he was.
Oh, Eddie was, I mean, he's in the USA Hockey Hall of Fame for a reason. And he just kept getting better and better, right? Like I said, like Eddie was the youngest star on our team. He was, my dog's trying to bring me the ball to throw it to him, my puppy. Not right now, pal. So Eddie just kept getting better and better. And this is the thing, too, I think that helps anybody, including me, Pat, but especially big guys, right? Is that Eddie, and I saw this, I was actually with the 92 team. I broke my foot before the Olympics, but I saw it with Tkachuk. And then I remember I grew up with Kevin Stevens, right? Big guys like that, right? The skating we did, we used to do these blowouts, they were called, after every freaking game, an hour of conditioning, skating, like flying around the corners, coaches busting you. You know what I mean? To push it to your limit, you know, to the point where they're almost angry if you're going around the circles flying where you didn't crash into the boards because you weren't leaning in enough, you know what I mean, to blow an edge. So having said that, like to see the skating improve for guys like that over 6 months is huge. Not just all of us, but when you're a bigger guy like that, you know, and you can put that together with the skill those guys had, right, and the smarts and all that, like I think it had a lot to do with the development and, you know, like all of them being really potential Hall of Famers, right? And that Olympic experience was definitely beneficial, but I think really huge, you know what I mean, for guys like that, as opposed to guys that were really – already kind of elite skaters, you know what I mean, on it.
Yep.
But then you see Eddie develop as he was at Chicago, Toronto, scoring 40-plus goals and, you know, all that stuff. Like Eddie worked his ass off. You know, he was a hard worker. He had a great attitude. He was a very unselfish hockey player, a great teammate. You know, couldn't ask for a better teammate. Phenomenal line mate, like everything.
Just like our Ed.
Yeah, same as I was just thinking that. You know what I mean?
Hard worker, slower than everybody else, especially to come on the podcast.
Exactly, 100%.
But you really, I'm an hour behind you guys, so I'm a little bit slower, you know?
So, Dave, let's talk about the ride for that 84 Olympic team, the memories of the whole tournament.
So, you know, the ride, and the tournament's so short compared to what, you know, you – again, it was such a special year, and Pat and I, like we talk about, like pro hockey was phenomenal, but that league was like that year was something. Like we turned it to, you know, from boys to men, so to speak, right? On that, and we started our season back then on August 7th, right? And the Olympics began February 7th, right? So I talk about a 6 month journey before a 2 week Olympic experience, right? Colorado Springs training camp, crazy, right? White vest skating. To Alaska, I want to say it was after my birthday because I remember my mom sent me a cake to the training center. So that pushes it back. I was wrong. In 84, 1984, I was turning 19 on the Canada Cup team, right? And so remember I said 18? I just got to remember I was turning 18 just in August. So like the team was picked in July, then in August. But my mom sent me a birthday cake out there, which was – you know, we all ate it, but I definitely took a razzin' from the older guys, right? but we left for we went to Anchorage and we played the Russians first series, 6-game series in Alaska. It was a phenomenal experience. But that ride, I mean, then it was to Finland, then it was back to the States to play preseason games against all the NHL teams. Then it was like Team Canada back to Europe. It was crazy, you know. And we did play. I want to say like maybe 8 games against college teams. Well, whether it's BU, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, like the best teams, right, on it. But it was a grind. You know what I mean? It was a grind because if we weren't training at the highest level, we were playing games and having receptions every night. One of the things, like, you know, Pat and other guys on the team that I'm still close to would say is that, you know, maybe we were a little bit over-commercialized and overplayed leading up to the Olympics that the 80 team didn't have. Not to mention we're playing in Sarajevo, Yugoslavia, yeah, as opposed to Lake Placid, right? So it's, the cards are kind of stacked against you. We did have the best regular season. Our record was better than the 80 team and better than any other national team to that point. And we beat Canada series, beat the Russians in the 12-game series, which had never happened before. But like I said, I really feel like by the time February came around, like we kind of peaked in December. You know what I mean? When we played the Russians, yeah, we played them all over the country back then. It was on Dateline because there was the KOL shoot. You know, there was a lot of protests back then. Remember the plane that got shot down? Yeah. I think it was called KLAL-007.
Yeah.
You know, what's the weird part about that, gentlemen? I'll tell you a story too. Is that flight originated out of Alaska, right? That was going overseas to, I believe it was to Asia somewhere, right? On it. I can't remember where it was going. But we all stayed in the Holiday Inn in Alaska. And that flight, we were all there that morning when the and of course we had to wear our USA Hockey blazers and everybody knew who we were, right? You couldn't get away from it. But they made you wear it, right? Wherever you were going, we had sponsor stuff. All we were like a freaking walking, you know, sponsor board, right? Wherever we went. So we were in the lobby with the flight crew, you know, that left on that flight that got shot down. We were in the air and we heard about it. We're flying to Finland from Alaska, you know, to play the Finnish national team six times and then Sweden or whatever. But that was just, that was crazy. I don't know if you remember, it was a big deal back then. And we had to change the venue for our December. We were playing in Madison Square Garden and all the big venues, LA and whatever, to smaller venues, meaning like Cincinnati. You know, we did play in Lake Placid. It was on national TV and they kept that, but all the big cities, it was wiped out. And you had what the heck was that show? Not Dateline, whatever the show was, it was the most popular show at night. And I want to say time, I forget what it was, but it was always, you know, the protests were on the news and the games were on the news back then. It was pretty high profile. Different world, though. There was just TV, you know? There was nothing else, mm-hmm, right? The news.
Yep.
I was a channel changer for my dad. You know what I mean? No remote and all that stuff.
Yes.
But I guess going back to experience, a phenomenal experience, like, as far as, like, life lessons and, you know, like, development as hockey players, coaching, relationships. Can't get any better. Probably a little bit long and probably a little bit too much of a grind for the players, what they asked us to do, not just on the ice with all the freaking, we were like a carnival, you know what I mean? With all the receptions and they, you know, I used to call it a moneymaker, you know, for USA Hockey, so to speak, because sponsorships, ticket sales, these events were highly paid and attended. You know, it was definitely a grind. You felt it when, you know, you get to February.
So, Dave, before we move on from the Olympics and the national team to other things, I'm going to have Ed and Tom chirp in with some questions. Tom, what do you got?
Yeah.
While you were at the Olympics, were you able to, enjoy the experience and go and see other activities and sports?
No. To be honest with you, I mean, you're so zoned in. My family did. My parents did when they were over there, but you're pretty locked in. We got there. We went over a couple of weeks earlier. I think we went to Austria and then, you know, we played their national team just to stay fit and try to, you know, that type of thing, right? And get adjusted to the time change. And I think we went to either Sweden or Finland after that, right? And played a couple of games. But having said that, you get into that village. And for me anyway, and the guys I was with, like, you're focused on the next event, you know what I mean? And you played every other day, right? So, mm-hmm, and we actually played, our first game was against Canada, and I still remember it was on February 7th. Opening ceremonies were on February 8th, so we were the only first event and only event to happen on February 7th, right? Which was crazy, too, because there was a, and it's kind of funny, I think I was talking to Louis Vero. He's a character. Like, he always remembers, and I forget about it, that like when we left the Olympic Training Center, he said that it was intentional. But we got the bus driver, he said, was drinking. I didn't know this, right? And he took the wrong route and we got caught in traffic. We showed up at the rink like 10 minutes before we had to get on the ice, or we would have forfeited. It was crazy. Now, I don't remember it because I'm wet behind the ears, right? And, I'm on the bus, but I do remember the traffic and having a rush, but like it was crazy. And that game, I'll tell you this, like the Olympics, how it was. So you had an A and a B pool back then, right? So the top two teams from each pool went on to the medal round. Now it changed in 1988 to the quarterfinals, 4-4. You know what I mean? Which was kind of, I wish it was like that for us, because we knew the Czechs were as good as the Russians, right? And we had Czechoslovakia in our pool in Canada. So we're like, we got to beat Canada. And we beat them, I think it was freaking 10 times during the year out of 12. We ended up losing that game. I think it was a 3-2 or whatever it might have been, 4-2, but we lost that game. Then the Czechs, we played, I don't think it was the next game. I think it was like the third game. So we were tied, or it was a 2-1 game in the third period. And, reffing's beautiful, right? And it was 2-1 game. And LaFontaine and I were breaking out of the zone on a 2-on-1. And I remember, like, nearing the blue line, he hit me with a pass across the ice. Now, imagine this. I caught the pass at the blue line, right? I skated in the goal, and I could skate pretty fast. But I actually faked a shot, pulled to my backhand, put in the net. As I was putting in the net, the whistle's blowing, right? Like, open that, the goalie bit for it. Offsides, right? Wow. And, like, freaking Louis losing his mind. And they didn't play the game. Like, it wasn't on TV. Like, they used to cut in and out because they had all the events. But, like, Louis was losing his mind because that would have tied the game, momentum, right? We were going wild, right? So, in the next 2 minutes, Czech scored. We're down 3-1, right? I think we lost the game 3-1, right, on it. But those two games were – and we knew it from the start of the freaking – back in August. Like, we got to win. We got to beat Canada because the Czechs are going to be really hard to beat. Like, that's the game to win. And we, we were right there with Canada. We were tied 2-2. I think they scored in the third period. And, that was the situation. And, it was heartbreaking because, you finish third in your division, you don't go – you're out, right? Out of it.
Ed, question for Dave.
Sure, Dave. Dave, what was it like to play against the Russians, especially back in those years? I mean, they were just awesome.
Oh, what a different world. People, unless you lived in that day and age, you wouldn't understand it, right? But it was indescribable. But for me, after watching the 80 team, like playing them, even the first game in Alaska, like the electricity going through your body, not to mention the first time you put on your USA sweater, you go out and you're like, indescribable. I've never felt a feeling like that in my life, on it. And every time we played them, I felt the same way. But I'm telling you, you'd go through a wall, and there were freaking wars, on the ice out there. I loved it. It was like, you just can't get that adrenaline anywhere else, That was something that indescribable. If you're old enough to remember what the times were like back then, I think you'd understand a lot more than, kids today. Like, it's a whole different world, right?
Yeah, the Cold War.
Yeah, you just don't, unless you live that during that time, you won't understand it. But my God, Like, I'll never forget the feeling of the first time, and really every time, but the first time is next level,
So, Dave, after the Olympics, you ended up taking a different route, not straight to the NHL.
Well, I did go straight. Well, I went to the Canada Cup, and right. then I went to Hartford, right? Yeah. So I was with Hartford, so that's where I went, from the Olympics. And then I was with Hartford for a little bit. And then, I was playing with Ronnie Francis, which was really cool. And I had a really great training camp. I think and I still remember, you remember these things because it's pretty impactful. Whatever it was, like, I think I had 4 or 5 goals in 6 games, and playing with Ronnie. And things were a little different back then with Americans. And we had a coach named Tex Evans, Jack Evans, who notoriously, and I could never understand this, like, wasn't the biggest fan of American hockey players, So I started off the season, I think I had 4 assists in the first 5 games, right, with Ronnie. But I was snake bitten, couldn't score, right? So Jack drops me to fourth line, two shifts a game, well, three out in the third period. You know what I mean? That type of thing for, I mean, you know, starting a game. So I think it said 13 games I played. So, but I really only played five, you know what I mean, in that time frame. And then, you know, and then it was like, it was really difficult because, you know, they signed me to a great contract because they had college eligibility. It was a one-way ticket. Like, we never expected not to have a chance to develop, you know what I mean? Like, past, like, 2 weeks, whatever it was, right, on it. But I remember Jack saying to me one time, like, and it was really uncomfortable because I'm still a kid, right? I just graduated high school. Like, so what makes an what makes a kid think he could come out of high school and play in the NHL? I said, I guess, you know, your general manager, you know what I mean, who won the friggin' Simon? You know, like, I don't know, first round, you know, that type of thing. But he just, for some reason, and then, like guys like Mark Fusco was there, lighten it up, gone, you know what I mean, sent away. By the time I was gone, like, even Mark Johnson, a captain, they traded him. Like, and I hate to sound that way, but it was just, it was a horrible experience. And, you know, then they sent me to Binghamton, and it was just more of the same, right? Like, I was only playing a couple shifts a game, which was really bizarre. And, you know, obviously my agent wasn't too happy about it and stuff, but, like, I'm just trying to, you know, find my way back, right, on it. Then I get traded to Washington at the deadline, right, for Dean Evason and Peter Sidorkiewicz. Isn't it funny how I get traded, right, come up, Paul, they're all, you know, everything's great. Like, we're going to freaking, you're going to get the time here, develop all that stuff, right, on it. You know, and I was roomed with Carpi, but they said, listen, you haven't played a lot. We're going to send you back. I go, they're not going to play me. He goes, oh, yeah, they are. You know what I mean? So, and back in those days, like, there were 21 teams, right? And the AHL, I think there were 10 teams in the whole AHL, right, back then. And you shared a team. So Hartford and Washington shared the Binghamton Whalers, believe it or not, right? So I get traded to one organization, same thing, right? And, like, Hershey, talk about a tough team, right? Hershey was shared by Philly and Boston, right? All the – so it was your top, like, eight prospects on each side, right? And then a couple of goalies, whatever it is, you know what I mean? Eight, nine, two, whatever it was, prospects. The HL was a great league, but it was freaking nuts back then too. So I went back and I was playing right away and doing really well, right? Like, playing the whole 9 yards. It was bizarre. But then, right, I don't know how long it took, maybe five games into it, Marty McSorley was playing for, I want to say Baltimore, but whatever team we were playing, because I think it was with Pittsburgh back then. I hadn't beaten a step. I was cutting in the inside on a step on him, and Marty was trying to get the puck, and his stick got jackknifed between my knees. So we were falling through the ice. My leg was going one way. His weight took my knee, like, and you heard the crack and the crunch, and, like, it was horrible. I remember sliding the ice with him, and I was in so much pain, and he knew, like, he heard it. He's like, oh, fuck, sorry, man. You know what I mean? Like, that type of thing. And I couldn't even breathe, right? But I completely I blew my knee out to the point where I disintegrated. I didn't just tear my ACL, MCL, and PCL, if you know what those are, right? Yeah. And then the doctor, like, I remember being in the training room, and the doctor, like, you know, the trainer said, yeah, it's not good. They're flying you back to Washington tomorrow, you know, and I knew it wasn't good. And I went to the Bethesda, the Naval Academy, and they had to put a toolbox in my knee, like screws, bolts, staples, actin, take tendon out, acting as ligament. And, you know, for me, I hadn't even really got a start, right? And my game is speed and skating. I'm like, I'm freaking screwed. You know what I mean? Like, this is – I'm totally screwed. Now, it was a long therapy, right? I had a cast. Back then, you had a cast from the top of your thigh, right, where your leg really intersects with you know what, right, all the way to your freaking toes for 4 months, like a cast, right? Then they cut that thing off, and you look at your leg, your femur's this big, and you see those. I remember just, like, almost throwing up, looking at my knee and my leg, and I did make it back, but you're never the same. You know what I mean? Like, my straightaway speed was pretty close to what it was, but you never have that same lateral movement because you don't have real ligaments in your knees, and you got a toolbox in there, you know? So, But I was fortunate, you know, I got back, I worked my way back. I played for Washington, you know, for a bit. Every time things would go well, though, it seemed like something else would happen. Like, had two reconstructive shoulder surgeries, another knee reconstruction. It was not a really great career when, that was my first year, your rookie year. You're kind of like, you're railing, and then every time you sort of get going again, something else devastating happens. But that's life. That was God's plan for me. I accepted it, And it's kind of funny because Louis Vero, again, my Olympic coach, and I was close to Timmy Till and the rest of the guys too. God rest Timmy's soul. But Louis always calls me, but still close to this day, Louis Vero, right? Says, you Jensen, I'm getting tired of it. I see Louis all the time. Jensen, it just kills me that people, they don't know the freaking great, how great you were as a hockey player because that, the whole nine yards. And he's like, you want to have top three, tell me this, right? I'm like, Louis, I've accepted it. Like, you're going to have to accept it at some point in time, right? That it wasn't meant to be. And I'm grateful because a lot of kids didn't have the opportunity to play in the Olympics, the Canada Cup, which was phenomenal, or the NHL. And I was able to put a Bruins sweater on, for Christ's sakes, which was another dream come true, right? Just before I ripped my shoulder out again, you know what I mean? So, but having said that, I'm grateful. Other people like Bugs Louie, I don't know why to this day. I'm like, I'm fine with it. I wish it was different, but what are you going to do, right? Accept it, and that was God's plan.
Tom, question for Dave.
Sure. Do you remember who your first goal was against in the NHL?
Yeah, what was his name? Brodeur.
Richard Brodeur.
Vancouver, right? Richard Brodeur. So it was my first game back with the Capitals after my knee surgery. It was on November 15th because I was out almost a whole year. Till actually, I came back pretty early. It was the first game, November 15th of 85, and I blew my knee out. I think the trade deadline was in March. It was in March of 84 when I blew it out. I'm sorry, 85, right? The 84, 85, right? That year. So I was supposed to be out a year. I came back early because I worked my ass off, in Washington. I was in Washington the whole time working with, their trainers and stuff. So yeah, it was Richard Brodeur who it was.
He had a cool mask too.
He did. He did. It was different back then,
Yeah.
Yeah, it really
Ed,
was.
question for Dave.
Sure. Dave, what was your favorite rink to play at?
Yeah, so I mean, there were like Madison Square Garden. That was something else. And like I said, I started with Hartford, right? So like I went from the Canada Cup to Hartford, played those 13, really 5 games, whatever it was. But we played. My first NHL game was at Madison Square Garden opening night in New York.
That's
What
pretty.
a freaking zoo! I mean, it was crazy. It really was. They used to have the tarps like where you went off at the end of the tunnel because the fans would throw stuff at you. You know what I mean? It was like a freaking zoo. But I mean, the atmosphere was it was unbelievable. I still remember we tied him, and I did have an assist that game, so it was really exciting. That game it was phenomenal. But I love that Montreal, foreign Chicago. Chicago Stadium was freaking. In the early on, I played there, and guys don't warn you, right? So we're in Chicago, and I don't know if you guys ever been there back in the day with the horn.
Oh, no, not the horn, but
No.
you could hear it on TV.
Oh my God. So you're there, right? And the first time Chicago scored a goal, right? That horn went off. I mean, it shakes you for when you're on the bench, you're right underneath it, right? I mean, it's freaking crazy how loud that was in the organ. Like that place was special.
And
Obviously, the garden was very special to me, the Boston Garden. But I'd say those three rinks, New York. Detroit was great, but I didn't have the same feeling. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking original six, right?
yeah.
Teams.
The old Chicago Stadium, you had to walk up the stairs too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was crazy. I mean, those were steep stairs too. You had to be careful, Like going
Hey,
up and down.
how about a welcome to the NHL moment? Did you have one of those?
Probably more than one, you know what I mean? So, if I can remember correctly, I had even before. I remember in the Canada Cup, playing. I mean, that was really a level above the NHL, right? When you're playing those guys. I remember playing in Edmonton. Like I said, we played Canada six freaking times exhibition before the actual Canada Cup, and we ended up tying them in Montreal in the real Canada Cup 2-2. But we're in Edmonton. We're 5-on-3. And Badger Bob's the coach, right? Bob Johnson.
Johnson.
5-on-3 power play, and you're playing like the umbrella, and I'm on the like off wing right side, and the puck's going around. I think Chelly's up top, and the puck's coming over to me for one time. I put my head down to take a shot. I'm gonna one time a slap shot, and I got freaking run over. I got hit by I don't know what. And I just remember being on my ass, like looking up and seeing number 11 Messier skating off the ice. I'm like, holy God, like what the hell was that? You know what I mean? It just hit me. That was just freaking crazy.
Tom, question for Dave.
Yeah. How did you mentally prepare for a game day?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, I used to, obviously, back then you had your pre-game skate, right? Then you'd have a pre-game meal, and then I used to try to rest and try to visualize. I learned that on the Olympic team, like visualization. You know, different situations, I always do that. You know, having the puck here, what are you going to do? And I think that really helps, you know what I mean, as far as you know, buying into that visualization. I think they probably still use it today because it works, you know, and that's how I prepare, get to the rink early. I was, you know, like hockey players, superstitious, right, on certain things you did.
Ed, question for Dave.
Who was the toughest player that you played against?
Oh, my God. There were a lot of them.
Yeah, that hurt.
Holy God. You know, his fighters are just tough, you know?
Just tough guys. I mean, you know, just that dude when he hit you. You know, you felt like the safe was getting pushed off the top of the building like a cartoon, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, every team had freaking some – it was crazy. I mean, you go into Philly, you had Talkin, Brown, and freaking, you know, those guys. I mean, look at every team. Detroit had freaking, you know, Probert and Kosher. Kosher might have been the scariest fighter I ever saw. You know what I mean? Joey Kosher, like the most dangerous puncher as far as knockout punch. Might have been him, but, you know, I played my first, and I'll never forget this, too. So with Hartford, first game was New York, then it was back-to-back against the Bruins, where we played Hartford Saturday night and then Sunday in Boston. And Terry O'Reilly was still playing. That was his last year, right? And I'll never forget in Boston, right, lining up and, you know, seeing, I think Francis was, you know, I was playing with Ronnie, right? So that was the first line back then. And I'll never forget seeing Taz come out, like, right wing. You know, pulling up decks, you're like, oh, shit. I mean, like, I'm 165 pounds, right? My first year in the NHL. And I'll never forget this because certain things you won't forget in life. But at one point during a shift during that game, we were both going to the corner, like, for a puck, right? And we're tied going for it. And as I'm going for it, Terry kind of puts his hand on, you know, hand on me. And I'm skating through. And both of us fell backwards, right? I remember Taz, I looked over to my right. And I look at Terry, I got up so freaking fast, right? And obviously I was still fast and got the frick out of there. You know what I mean? Like, because I'm like, I'm not getting, this guy will kill me. And I didn't know Terry at that point in time, but he wasn't that kind of player. You know, Terry fought, and I know this from, you know, not only like when he was a coach, but from playing, watching Terry, he fought tough guys and protected his own players. I mean, you never see him like go after skill guys, you know, that type of thing. But, and I kind of joke when I say that. I get up fast, but you just can't bail on a play. You go into the corner and you take your freaking hit and you just get you know? But I'll never forget that. On the ice, like, we're sliding towards the boards. I'm like, hey, I got to get my ass up, you know, real quick.
So, Dave, how did you know at the end when it was all done, time to move on?
Yeah, so I kept battling, you know what I mean? I kept battling back from, like I said, I had four reconstructive surgeries from 84 to really 1990, you know what I mean, on it. And then I went to Italy. Like, the 2 years I was with Boston, I had two reconstructive surgeries at the beginning of the year, right? And that was from a pre-existing injury I had with the Capitals. You want to talk about a hit. I think it was 86, 87. It was the last game we were playing New York. I think they knocked us out of the playoffs in game 7. And I'm flying up the middle, and Larry Murphy's got the puck behind our net. And, like, we're looking for a home run pass. I'm flying up the middle, and Murph sends me a freaking, like, one of his signature saucer passes. And I'm looking back, and I'm like, it's not getting here quick enough because I can feel something coming. Kurt Giles could hit like a freaking train, right? So just as the puck hit my stick, all I can remember is freaking, you know, freaking being knocked up in the air, my shoulder, my head, every crawling to the freaking bench, right, back then. And obviously the place is going wild. Again, Madison Square Garden, right? So I get to the bench. Back then, too, it was like, I'm hurting, and it's maybe halfway through the third period. And it's like next shift up, like Brian Murray's like, "You ready, Jens?" So I'm like, "Yeah." And it was the last game of the season. My shoulder was killing me, but like I carried into next season, and then that didn't work out well. You know what I mean? And I just kept trying to like, because I didn't want to be injured again. I knew there was a problem. And then with Boston, like like Taz saw me one time out on a shift, and I ran to my buddy Stevie Leach, believe it or not, who was my roommate in Washington, him and Carpy, right? And Scotty Stevenson one time. But I ran into Leachy, and I could feel it again, you know, like it was same pop out. And really back then, like they were diagnosed as a separation. I knew it was more than that. But Taz was like, after the game, he goes, "Hey, I saw that." He goes, "What happened?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's nothing, Taz." He goes, "No." He goes, because Taz had a shoulder problem. He's playing with a harness in his last year. Like he still resents like certain things that happened to him, right, with his shoulder. And he goes, "I want you to see Bert Zerins tomorrow, you know?" And I wanted to see Bert. And Bert's like, we talked about the history. He goes, "Do they ever do like an arthrogram?" I go, "What's that? Inject dye in a CAT scan?" I go, "No, you know, never." So Bert's like, "We're going to do that now." And then we did the exam. They inject the dye. And then I'm talking 1988, right? So technology was a little different back then. So I remember waiting in that room. And Bert goes, "Oh, come on in. I got Harry on the phone." So he brings me in the office and he goes, "We got you scheduled for reconstructive surgery tomorrow." He goes, "I got to tell you, that's the worst shoulder I've ever seen. It's like hanging by a thread. You know what I mean?" And he goes, "I'm going to put you together, but I can never, really can't guarantee playing pro sports, especially where it's your left shoulder and you're a lefty shot and you got to open up like that. It's going to hold, you know what I mean?"
Yep.
On it.
Yep.
So then I went through, you know, 5 months of rehab for that. Right. Then I'm coming back and go to Maine for reconditioning, lighten it up there. Right. The day I'm getting called up, back up to Boston, right? I'm out there playing against Nova Scotia. McSorley's little brother, I forget his name. He was a freaking little nut too. I forget his first name, Chris McSorley, right? And he was much smaller than Marty, but he ran around like a freaking nut out there, right? So I ran into him, right? We both ran into each other, our knees locked, and I felt like my right knee, not my left knee, that I've had reconstructed. I felt something happen. I'm like, "Oh shit." And I'm limping. Doctor comes in. They did like an exam afterwards, like the x-ray and stuff. Second degree freaking ligament sprain, right?
Oh.
On it. Put me in a cast for 6 weeks, right? And now we're in March, right? It took that long from October to come back to whatever it was, right? March. So Gordy Kuzak and I, like Harry gave us permission, went down to Florida because the playoffs were happening, stayed his condo because it was just too tough to freaking watch hockey when you could be playing, you know. But the luck of the Irish, you know what I mean? Like, and then the next year in camp, right? Like Harry re-signed me, right? Next year in camp, blew it out again, shoulder. So I was out those two seasons, like pretty much were a wash. So then I went to Italy for a year. The same year, Yari Curry signed for $1 million, cash free, which they didn't pay the NHL in 1991. Now, I didn't get a fraction of that, right? But it was phenomenal because Louis Vera was over there, and we had, like, Mark Johnson, a lot of NHL guys played in Italy that year because they were paying so well, and they're all former NHL guys just to try to, you know what I mean, see if I could 36-game season, bigger ranks, like, let's try to get something back, and went really well. Then I came back with a 91-92 Olympic team, and I was playing on that team up until – I took a slap shot like 6 weeks before the Olympics off my inner foot, broke my foot in a walking boot. Like there's the Olympics. And I got to tell you, I went after that. I knew, I always try to hide it, but like my shoulder was never the same. It always bothered me. Like it was even tough to wash my hair and I couldn't play the same as I always could. So I really knew it was over, but I was still trying to go on. It's funny how it wasn't my knee in the end. It was really my shoulder that did me in. And then, you know, I had met my wife at that point in time and she knew, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't hide it from her and stuff. She's like, "You got to think about the rest of your life, man." You know what I mean? Like, and all that stuff. And at that point in time, like I had a chance to go because expansion started happening. Now we're still at 21 teams, right? So just when I was retiring in 92, now San Jose and all these teams are coming to fruition, right? And I could have went out to San Jose, I think it was, or I can't remember what. And I said, "No, You know what I mean? Like, my body's not going to hold up. You know, I don't think it would have, but yeah, it's always tough because you love. It's like giving up something that, you know, like a child. You know what I mean? Like something you love so dearly, and you know, then it's on to real life in the real world, right?
So, Dave, I got to ask you, who we've asked this question a bunch on different episodes. Who was the funniest guy that you ever played
Oh,
with?
jeez. Oh, man. There was some funny dudes. Oh, my God. That's a good question. I'll tell you one of the guys that was, and it wasn't even an NHL, but he played for LA, a guy named Darrell Evans, right? I don't know if you ever heard of Darrell Evans. So
Yeah.
where he scored a famous goal where LA beat the Kings, you know what I mean,
Yep.
in overtime. Definitely the funniest guy I've met as a hockey player, you know, and he did play in the NHL. He was freaking, I mean, it's just funny. So the other guy that I would say too was probably LB. You know what I mean? LB was like, people don't realize how intelligent that kid was and how witty he was. Like, he was funny as hell too. LB was the best. I loved him so dearly. And
Guy.
we were close friends well beyond our playing careers. And you know, and it's just such a sad situation because he was the best. You know what I mean? He really was.
I had an opportunity to meet LB quite a few times when he worked at AAF, and the account executive that used to call on me introduced us quite a few times. Just a good guy, very much so.
Genuine guy, and
Very much so.
talk about a guy too that always wished the best for everybody. Like, that's the guy. You know what I mean? It didn't matter if he was competing with you for a job. Like, I've never met anybody like LB in my life as far as like how kind and caring he was to charitable initiatives, like sincerely and genuinely, and the well-being of other human beings. As tough as he was, and he's one of the toughest guys I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Talk about a knockout punch too, right? On the ice. And Terry Rye's the same way. Nicest guy off the ice. Would you want to fight him? No. You know what I mean? On the ice, he freaking like probably one of the toughest NHL players ever, right?
Yeah,
Terry Rye. But
one
LB was
thing.
just an amazing human being. And like I said, we roomed a bit together back in the day. And then, you know, I had a Cape House. LB used to come down all the time. And then he moved to Holliston, where my kids grew up. In fact, he got my kid his first job at his wife's. It was called the Holliston Pet Resort, right? Holliston Meadows, and bought my son his first alcoholic beverage when he turned 21. So, but LB was a special, special guy. I've never met anybody like him, and he's irreplaceable as a human being, you know? Funny as hell. I mean, when you talk about funny, like
Yep.
he's right up there with Darrell Evans. Those are probably the two of the funniest guys ever.
So we'll just start winding down and wrapping it up. So Tom, you got a final question for Dave?
Sure. What would you say was your proudest moment in your hockey career?
Wow. So that is a real good question. And I think I'd have to take it back to just because of the time, like just the time in history and everything was the Olympic team, making the Olympic team, putting that USA jersey on. Now that goes in hand with like putting the Bruins sweater on for the first time. Because I remember both times going in the locker room and hoping no one sees you and actually looking in the mirror and saying, wow, you know what I mean? Like with a USA sweater or a Bruins sweater on, and looking at your name on the back, right? Like this. And like, is this for real? Right. So, proudest time was probably playing in the actual Olympics, you know, in that opening ceremonies and all that.
Ed, final question for Dave.
So, what do you like about today's NHL, and what don't you like about today's NHL? And is that it's like a three-part question, and
Yeah.
still believe that fighting still belongs in the game?
Yeah. So, I love the speed and skill of it. You know, I don't like the fact that I feel like, and I honest to God, I feel like the rinks are too small for these guys. You know what I mean? Out there, like I just feel like there's not enough room out there. You know what I mean? And because of the speed and the skill, like it's really shrunk the rink. You know what I mean? For that, I
Yeah.
wish to God they go to the Olympic size rinks with the size of these guys and how fast they can skate these days. Like, I don't like that part of it, you know, because I think the speed and skill, you'd be able to like really enjoy it a lot more. You know what I mean? On that fighting, yes, because I believe like those guys, not only are they warriors, right? but I believe they protect, like, not just the integrity of the game, but the cheap shot hits, the high sticks and all that stuff that goes on. So not because, you know, for barbaric reasons, but I think it actually in the long run protects players. You know what I mean by that? Like having fighting. Now I'm all about, like, you know, like these guys have helmets and stuff. And like, if a guy's getting beat, like get right in there. You know what I mean? Like on a fight, that type of thing on it. Cause there were some crazy brawls back in the day that I don't want to see that, but I'm just talking about like someone cheap shot someone, you're going to answer for it, you know?
And not the scripted fights that they were going on for a while, that, but like truly coming to the defense of your teammate and stuff like that. For sure.
Exactly. And knowing the fact that if you're going to cross check someone in the back of the head or put them in, you know, like hit them from behind in a position where that might paralyze them, like you're going to answer the bell. Like everyone should have to, you know, I do believe in that. And I think it will protect players, you know?
All right, Dave, I usually end with one final question, but I have two. If you could come back and put on one former team sweater for one game, whose jersey do you put on?
So former teams that I'd never played for?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think, and it not nothing to do with like where they are right now as an organization, just, yeah. So I would say Chicago, the Blackhawks, you know what I mean? Like I've always, outside of Boston, I've always loved their uniforms, their players, their rank, and everything else, you know, about them. So I think that would be it, Chicago.
And I always ask every guest that we've had on this question to close the show. If you could sum up your career in one word, what would it be?
Grateful. I really am grateful because we just talked about, right? Like I could be, you know, you could whine about injuries and all that, but no, I'm grateful for everything I've gotten. And hockey owes me nothing. I owe hockey everything.
It's a great answer. It's a great answer.
Yeah. Well, I think about the relationships you took out of it. That's what I value. You know, I get so many great friends from it, you know?
So before we let you go, do you have anything coming up that any charity events or anything that you got going on with the kids?
Well. So what we do, and I'm not doing the hockey skills anymore, but I'm still an active member of the Bruins alumni, and we have all sorts of charity games coming up. We just had a golf tournament, and we have the Bowl with a Bruin with Frankie Simonotti coming up on, I think it might be sold out, it's on the 21st of this month. And then Kevin Stevens has a gala on the, I want to get this right, the 25th, if that's Thursday, and Marty Walsh is being on. That's for recovery, you know, for – it's a special thing for guys in recovery. And there's a lot of guys in NHL that suffer from it. And I'm 15 years sober myself, you know? So it's near and dear to my heart.
Very cool. But what's near and dear to our heart, Dave, is having you on the show. And I always say, you know, once you've been on, I say it every time. Friend of the show, Dave Jensen, everybody.
Thank you, guys. And I consider you guys friends. You guys are awesome. Really.
Yeah, we've been
this.
Trying to tie you down since like the springtime, and just with life and everything. It's been fantastic having you on, and just making the connection and being able to go back and forth with some text and Facebook stuff. It's great.
Well, keep in touch, guys. And thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure, my honor to be on it.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much, Dave.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
We'll talk, Dave.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.